Welcome to Rocket Ship, the home of epic React Native content. I'm Simon Grimm, creator of galaxies.dev, and today's guest is Henry Moulton from beautiful London, principal engineer at Yonder. So thanks for joining me, Henry.
Thank you very much.
So Henry is, as I said, principal engineer at Yonder, and you are working on a really interesting application that actually has won a UX award. We're going to definitely talk about that. But you also gave a talk, I think last year, was it last year at AppJS 2023, exactly about testing. Okay. You have an upcoming talk about AI. So Yonder, AI and testing, those will be the bigger topics for today. But I really want to start with your background. So tell us a bit more about where you're coming from and how did you finally come to React Native?
Yeah, so, you know, the way I say it is, you know, when I was a teenager, mobile apps and the iPhone being released were like the technology to build on top of. You know, I'm also lucky to be born around the same time the web browser and the World Wide Web came out. But, you know, the iPhone came out in 2007, and around the time I was starting to study computer science and think about what I want to do as a career for a job, building apps was already something that I was really enjoying doing. And it sort of felt like we were in the middle of the, you know, you look at like technology waves and they sort of follow an S curve. We were sort of coming out of the peak into the flattening of mobile, where we had this sort of duopoly of iOS and Android, and that didn't seem like it was going to shift anytime soon. We had some early technologies and early shoots of ideas on how you could do cross-platform mobile. So, you know, Simon and I are both users of Ionic back in the early days. And eventually React Native came out and matured enough with the sort of stewardship and ownership of both the React Native core team, but also on top of that sort of Expo at the time, Exponent. And I really saw Exponent at the time as this really cool technology to build cross-platform mobile apps, and sort of jumped in around 2016. I've just had amazing fun with React Native since. You know, I really see it as the technology to interface with users today, if you want to build really great interfaces to people, React Native is probably one of the best starting choices. And now, you know, it seems that we're in the start of a new S-curve of AI, really just starting, and some really, really interesting things are happening there. So when you're thinking about building products, you know, we're still going to have the traditional landscape, but we're probably going to have an additional technology on top. So, so it's a really exciting time to be a product developer, and a really exciting time for React Native as well.
100% agree. I actually, just today, I wrote the next newsletter for Galaxies, and I think I had exactly the line. It's an exciting time to be a React Native developer right now. So as you said, in 2014, 15, I was also an early user of Ionic, and I actually didn't switch to React Native immediately. I gave it a try back then, but I stick to Ionic for the next 8 years or so. Yep. And I think it's an interesting approach, and I still to this day like it. And the whole concept of like writing a web-based application and putting it in a native container, it kind of works, especially in like the B2B context, in the in-house context. No problems with that. But once you're talking about B2C applications and like delivering the best possible experience, yeah, you can either do Swift, or if you want to do cross-platform, then there's probably no better choice than React Native out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's you summarized it exactly right. The way I saw Ionic is, it's a clever almost, you could call it hack, or, you know, a clever approach to embedding a web browser technology inside the native app that allows you to do, you know, use the I think initially Angular and now React, I believe, for
yeah,
Ionic.
Yeah.
To build the interfaces that interface with your customer and your app, but as we saw, and you know, this was I think one of the reasons why Facebook lost to Instagram and to WhatsApp early on in the sort of mobile curve, which was, you know, they were trying to do a version of Messenger initially, and that used web views, and at the time with the single call performance of phones at that time in around sort of like 08, 09, 2010, just wasn't fast enough. And web views just ended up being a bit of a bad approach for that seamless low latency performant approach that customers seem to really enjoy with messaging apps. And it's probably a big reason why WhatsApp, you know, ended up several years later being acquired by Facebook for like $19 billion or something like that. it's just like a crazy price sum for a company that hadn't even, I think, charged for like a barely charged for revenue. But, you know, performance matters. Performance of apps really matters. And it's something that, you know, I think React Native takes really seriously as well.
Right. And speaking of performance and great applications that are worth 90 millions, let's talk about Yonder. Probably not yet at 90 millions valuation, but anyway, let's start with the basic view. So let's start with a basic view on the whole project for everyone listening. What actually is Yonder before we get into the technology and the problems?
Yeah, so I joined as the first engineer at Yonder. Yonder is started by three fantastic co-founders, Tim, Harry, and Thiso, who used to be at a credit scoring company called ClearScore. And they when they looked out at all the credit cards on the market in the UK, they really, you know, Tim in particular as a CEO, really saw maybe a gap in the market to build a premium card that competes with American Express and provides rewards that people actually want. In addition to using some new innovations in the market in the UK, we've got something called open banking, where rather than maybe you need to, if you come to the UK, which the UK has a lot of sort of skilled immigration coming to London and, you know, starting a career there, it's incredibly difficult for you to start a new credit card. To open a credit card account because your credit file doesn't exist yet. And so the early ideas of Yonder were use the open banking technology to take a look and verify that you are getting we can responsibly let you borrow. A big part of like Yonder is sort of like responsible borrowing. I think I joined about 3 years ago. And together, like a team of sort of around seven of us, spent about, and then later about 10, ended up building an app for, you know, between the time I joined and 9 months later, we sort of shipped a V1 of a new credit card in the market that was specifically for Londoners. And you could be rewarded rather than say like air miles or like points that you could then get for cashback. You could specifically go to really great restaurants that we would recommend you. Now that's really expanded. We've sort of done the quite typical startup approach of, you know, target a niche and then expand from there. That's the early origin story from my point of view.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. I mean, the problem with these apps is I usually can't test them because I think they won't work in Germany and some apps are in the United States and I can't test them, like the one from Gary was on the podcast. So, I assume it's great because it has a lot of great ratings for everyone in the UK. I highly recommend check it out, Yonder Credit Card. It's both on the App Store and on the Google Play Store. Why did you, in the first place, choose React Native for this? Because credit cards, banking, all that stuff sounds to me like I would probably use Swift or some like native approach. Did you just want to use React Native as a cross-platform thing because you were just like one or two developers, or was it an intentional choice that you made with React Native?
You know, it was definitely like super intentional. Like I came in as the first mobile developer. At the time it was in the engineering team was me, Harry, the CTO focused on backend, and then one other backend developer. And you know, like React Native, this is 2021. So there's still, I mean, even today there's still skepticism, but 2021, you know, you still have to prove it to, I'd say like, product managers, you still have to prove it to like a lot of people who maybe like heard that it can't perform against native, you know, from a few years ago. Because reputation matters, right? Like people remember your brand and they remember it's hard to shake off a negative perception. But, you know, through the work I've been doing in the previous years and I'd been looking at, you know, sort of new apps coming to the market, I've been playing with like the new sort of like parts of the new React Native architecture. That are, you know, particularly important, allow for high performance like JSI. And I was sort of seeing in my head that at around the same time the opportunity for me to join Yonder came up, I sort of started seeing that there was actually a really sort of good, like all of the sort of like negatives that people had said in the past had sort of been solved. If not, there was a clear path for them to be solved. And, you know, I did some early prototypes of, you know, like a really performant transaction list, and like, you know, like looking at, you know, the Apple Pay and Google Pay APIs, and looking at all these sorts of things that you need to use. There is a bit of native code in Yonder to bridge to the native APIs, like I mentioned, for Apple Pay and Google Pay. But, you know, it's not so extensive. It's not so difficult as to, you know, it's maybe just a few hundred lines of code at most. And, you know, the other 99% of the app is, you know, in TypeScript.
That's a big win as well.
Yeah. You know, like I say, like there was so many in retrospect, there's so many tailwinds that's been just like turned out to be a really good bet. You know, TypeScript itself has been a fantastic language, you know, stewarded by Microsoft, and has been just such a productive developer experience. It really enables us to have like strongly typed APIs that we can like generate from like swaggers, which just like saves us so much time. And there's so many sort of productivity tools that sort of came together that mean that we can sort of like, you know, continuously ship both the iOS and Android apps. You know, every week we have a sort of new update that we can continue improving the app. I think I'd really struggle to like point to a particular downside of React Native today. I think 2 years ago, I can talk about this sort of early struggles I was having. You know, there's always going to be some risk and some downside when you're looking at something new. Yeah. But so far it's paid off.
I mean, it's still a cross-platform approach, and there are just downsides to it. You will never have the same thing that Swift engineers have, but we have different other things that are better with React Native. So there were a lot of things you said that I want to dive deeper into. But first, I want to mention that I think this is exactly the same approach I take to projects. When I like want to try out a new technology or idea, I usually look for this like the critical path or the critical elements. And as you said, like you want to make sure that you can use the Google API for payments, or that you can use something, because I know that I can create a list and I know I can create a beautiful UI, but they're like these 3, 4, 5 things that make or break, that like the showstoppers. And if you can create these upfront in like just a blank project, then you have got so much confidence for the rest, because, you know, yeah, it might take me like 5 months to ship it, but I know it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, like, I remember speaking to, you know, for context to anyone who's listening, the London space for startups doing financial technology, fintech, is very competitive. We have like Revolut, Monzo, Starling as like three companies that are startups that are now valued, I'd say probably over at a minimum of like 3, 4, 5 billion pounds. I think maybe Revolut's 10 times that. As well as, you know, in foreign exchange, there's Wise. And then there's a big, big long tail of like investing, savings, current accounts, credit cards, everything. And, you know, if you look at the market, it's incredibly native heavy as a whole, because back when we had the first sort of wave and boom of those sort of like what we call challenger banking, it was 2015. And native was, you know, React Native wasn't mature enough, and native was the way. There was a startup bank run by a traditional bank called Metal, which is one of the first sort of banks in the UK to really use React Native, from what I see. And, you know, around the time Yonder got started, Chase, the biggest sort of banking platform and a company for people in the US, came to the UK and started their own sort of like challenger bank, and they use React Native. And, you know, so the tide had started changing as well.
Yeah. That's also the interesting thing all the time when people talk about Flutter. I can't really point to too many big companies using Flutter. Yes, BMW, and there are some, but for React Native, you just open the App Store and close your eyes and put your finger on the screen, you're going to hit a React Native application by a big company. It's unbelievable. So I want to get into the technology of Yonder. What is like the general technology stack? Are you using Expo? What's like the back end? What are you using? I'm really curious about the whole setup, the landscape.
Yeah. Let's just quickly run through back end. So Postgres databases using a bit of like a microservice sort of architecture, then using not the most popular language, but definitely one that's known for its sort of safety, type safety, and sort of functional elegance, is a language called Scala. Then APIs, like I mentioned, that are written using sort of Swagger documents, which we can then turn into sort of type safe API calls on the front end. Using React Native, like you mentioned, Expo. We're not a full Expo app. We've continue to bet on Expo modules and Expo to be a really great provider of a really great SDK, as well as using other parts of the Expo ecosystem. Below that, there's what are the key sort of libraries? A lot of gesture handler, a lot of reanimated. Data fetching is pretty regular and boring, actually. Just using sort of like Axios, React Query, nothing too crazy. I'd say on the day-to-day, you can talk about technologies, but you can also talk about how we collaborate, which is, working really closely with our backend engineers, working really closely with our designers, working really closely with our product managers to just try and get to something that we can iterate on every week, which I'd say is almost like a technology in itself. If you can build and organize an organization to ship quickly, it can be just as productivity enhancing as a particular development technology.
That's cool. That's a nice overview about technologies, and good to hear another company's using Expo, of course. So you said you had quite some native code or a bit of native code in your application, and then you're using Expo modules for that, I guess. What are the pieces that you had to come up with custom native code where there was no plugin on the market?
Yeah. So it's quite interesting. So the specific native code I can talk about is our sort of like Apple Pay, Google Pay interaction. So, when you sort of double tap on your phone and you can sort of tap to pay a terminal. These APIs are actually private, and I can't talk too much about how they're structured. But you have to quite literally request to Apple, and you'll be emailing Apple and Google, hey guys, can I get access to these APIs? And then they send docs. You will not find from what I remember, you will not find these APIs publicly on their websites. So that was a bit of a different development experience to receive like this form of documentation as attachments on emails. It was also quite a fun development challenge as well, because when you're doing as much sort of TypeScript and React Native level code, it's a learning experience to dive in a level of abstraction deeper and go through into you're starting to write. We actually chose to use Objective-C at the time and Java over Kotlin and Swift, just because I'd already done some Java before, and Objective-C I'd touched like a tiny bit, and I've just been sort of like, when I a lot of React Native modules are in Objective-C, so I've just been sort of like used to reading the syntax and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Swift looks a bit better. Anyway,
reading Swift. It just so happens that I was used to reading Objective-C.
I was also curious. So I know I can also like when I'm in the store, I double tap my iOS and then it shows my different cards. And I assume if I use Yonder, if I got the credit card, my card could also be added to that selection. I have no idea about it. So how does the Yonder credit card, either like from the app or in physical form, come into this screen in iOS? How does it work?
It's a great question. I'm just gonna hope there's not too much under NDA here when this is a private API. But essentially, The part of what you'll do during this integration is you'll write a small, what I'd say, module that enables you, that basically then when you ship your app using under the hood of whatever build tooling you're using, eventually you hit the Xcode compiler. And there'll be a small tiny module as part of that sort of whole app that essentially will go to Apple and be like, hey, Yonder app is eligible to be listed in this in the wallet app. It's like an entitlement, if I remember right. Sorry, I did this about 2 years ago, so it's a little rusty. But essentially it's a small module. And again, it's like you get this permission to be listed, and then you're just funneling some data from your main app to that module, so that by the time when you open the wallet app, it's just able to display a little bit about the Yonder card, like that kind of thing. So it was definitely off the main track of doing app development, and but it was a fun challenge.
Okay, ending it there. I don't want to get you into any trouble here. So we're probably not
Sure.
going to dive deeper. But as you said, it involves directly talking to Apple. And then probably could you compare this to like when you create an app clip or something to target the watch? Is it like you have to add something to Xcode next to your React Native app?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean by like module, because
Okay.
obviously Apple and Google use different terms. I'll just use module as the sort of like generic term there. And it's exactly like that. It's from when I haven't done an app clip myself, but when I looked early at the docs, it was like, oh, this seems similar to what I had to do for the payment module stuff.
Okay. Yeah, good to know. I'm always like it's good to know broadly some terms and like how things work. I don't plan to do anything like this in the future, but if anyone is listening, maybe they're gonna hear, oh, okay, it actually works like this. So it gives you this mental model, and then you can look up the different steps and they know they need to talk about to Apple and something. So I want to get into the whole UX of Yonder as well in a second, but I just want to quickly dive into what you said before, that you're shipping weekly updates to your users. First of all, how does it work? Do you use Expo EAS or what's your process for shipping weekly updates?
So when it was just me, we didn't even, it was just off my laptop, quite old school, but didn't really need anything more at that time. The app was ready for a staff release because we were releasing internally to staff initially. There's a whole it's not as exciting as React Native, but there's a whole part of Yonder which is regulated, and you have to you can't, as it turns out, you can't just like be like, hi, I want to offer credit cards to the UK public. You need to be certified to go do that. And that took some time. But the early release process were very different to how we do it today. I've looked at over the in the past, I've looked at lots of different tools. Using Fastlane, AppCenter, Bitrise, owning the Mac Minis themselves, and putting doing all of the sort of CI/CD sort of manually via scripting. But I was the incredibly impressed with EAS Build from day one. I think they've done a really fantastic job. And we're a happy customer for both build and submit.
Yeah, it works hand in hand, and I think everyone or every company that's doing like these weekly updates says, yeah, it has a price, but it's also worth it because it makes things so unbelievably easy. You've also seen this in was it the State of React Native survey where pretty much everyone who has once tried EAS said, yeah, it's great, I'm going to use it again.
Yeah. They know how to build a good tool. I
Yeah,
think the thing that
for sure.
is maybe worth mentioning is we don't use over-the-air updates. I'm a believer in EAS update, OTA updates as being something valuable for React Native. And we maybe might look at adding it in the future, but in the past, I've actually seen in bigger organizations, it actually adding a bit of additional process where people aren't too sure what the native release is, what the OTA update is. And at Yonder, we're really looking to do like sort of staff release on Friday that then people who are employed by Yonder will then, you know, test out essentially over the weekend on Monday. And then at some time around that, we're happy to then start pushing that towards the app stores and Play Store using a staged rollout, which I believe was not possible to do in expert updates until, I'm going to say, maybe 6 months ago. Feels about right. And I believe rolling out slowly is one of the most important things you can sort of do in an update for your customers. You know, you want to, you know, similar to a canary releasing on the back end of sort of like 1% target, and then roll out from there. You feel a lot when you're shipping every week. You feel a lot safer using that approach. Is how I've sort of thought about it.
Yeah, I think they released it with like Expo SDK 49 or something. I knew that it exists. I thought it is cool, but hearing now from like a real company that it's that useful, I just wonder, have you ever encountered the case where you like rolled it out to 1% and then on like Monday when you came back to the office, you saw there were tons of errors and you could fix something and stop like the rollout to the 99% of users?
Sorry. Yeah, exactly that. So like we have got value from it in the past. You know, we picked up, maybe you change like a native module in an upgrade using a third party and that introduced like a crash. It happens. Maybe you just missed some piece of logic in your sort of like staff testing and early sort of like test your test, your automated test, your staff testing. We don't have a very defined, you know, we're still a startup, so we want to move quickly. So we've explicitly chosen, hey, let's not have a really sort of long QA manual process here, doing a full sort of like manual regression. And so, you know, we can probably come on to it in terms of like what we do for automated testing, but doing the staged rollout is, you know, it's testing in prod, right? It's, hey, how's this performing? and testing in prod is just frankly one of the best ways you can continue to move at a high pace.
Yeah, I think for a startup that's probably critical. And you also said that you're still a small team, but you also said you're working closely together with the backend team and you're working closely together with your designer. Is there anything specific you do in terms of your collaboration, or is it just like hanging out in the same Slack channel and talking about things that you break and change?
Yeah, you know, I think collaborative and culture, it's very hard to pinpoint what it is that means we work closely together. I think it's a big reason why, you know, when you're thinking about hiring, you're not just thinking about the technical skills someone has, you're also thinking about the sort of like their behavior as to how they work with others. But you know, I think what I would say is everyone at Yonder, I think at a base level, is extremely kind and considerate. But, you know, on the other side of things, I think everyone also understands that there's like a massive opportunity to go build something really special for customers. And we pipe in all of the sort of like reviews we get into Slack. And there's generally like a level of optimism. And we just, I think, as a whole, really enjoy building stuff that those customers end up loving. Which is a really great flywheel for building a sort of collaborative culture. I think everyone knows what they're good at. I think everyone knows where they need help with. And, you know, we use things. Yeah, we use Slack. We use sort of tuple for pairing. And I think having a culture of designers, which are very quick to, you know, be very responsive and be very collaborative with developers. So you're trying to get this. Yes, there's handover from, you know, the design team to developers with maybe using a tool like Figma. But for a long time, I've also thought that is just one part of the flow. And there's a massive amount of sort of verification and checking and collaboration that happens backwards from developers back to designers. And, you know, I think that also, separate to testing, that leads on some thoughts into AI as well.
Yeah, that also brings us to the great user experience of your app. I think you have a lot to celebrate in your Slack channel if you celebrate good reviews. And you won the award Best UX of the Year 2023 by whatever company. I know, fine. Like, some companies give out a lot of awards.
There's a lot of, I think, to be fair, there's a lot of, like I mentioned, like London FinTech is a big industry. There's a lot of various awards. We keep them in a bookshelf at office. And, they're nice, but, they're really nothing, I'd say, compared to the feeling of like someone leaving a really nice review, or, you know, in some cases we've had emails from people. Like, I had an email from someone, you know, only 6 months after we launched, saying, hey, you know, like, I just want to say, like, well done on the app. And, you know, it just feels different to winning an award from, like you say, like a yet another like awards company. It's just, you know, I wait for the day we get the Apple Design Award, but I think our designers wish for it too, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe it could still happen. So I'm guilty of something. I have to confess that a few weeks ago I did a YouTube video, which is a fintech clone, and I used the Revolut app as sort of my inspiration for that fintech clone video. I don't know why I haven't found the Yonder application, because it looks even more beautiful. I mean, Revolut got an update back then, and they had like a pretty cool UI, I gotta admit. But what I see here in Yonder looks even better, probably. So I wonder, like, how did you create such a great UI? was it close collaboration with your designers? Did they design all the micro animations? And also, from a technology point of view, how did you like translate their Figma designs and ideas into Reanimated or Skia or whatever you're using?
Yeah. Well, just wanted to say, you mentioned Skia. Congratulations to William and Christian on the 1.0. We're excited to start using it at Yonder this year. Haven't used Skia yet. So UI, UX, you know, really can't take much credit here. It all goes to really the design team. But I think there is another team at Yonder which deserves another shout out, which is the sort of like experiences team, which then drive a lot of the content for our awards, for all the things you can do with those points you're accruing. It's almost like sometimes great design doesn't just come from the fundamentals of the design itself. It comes from allowing the content, the images, the videos, the copy to really be displayed in a aesthetic way, while being able to browse that information in a great user experience. I think does come back to the design team. Just like the sort of collaboration between designers who are typically designing Yonder Design in Figma and ourselves who are, you know, building in React Native. You know, sometimes I just, you know, you mentioned like micro animations. Sometimes I just take a piece of paper from the printer in the early days and just I'd sketch out this animation idea that I could have. And, you know, I'm never going to get it to the level of fidelity and quality like a designer could. But I think it's indicative, like I say, to developers, you know, you can, you should be always being collaborating with your sort of design team, from them to you, but you understand the technologies you are the interface, the app to the customer, and you understand what's possible more than frankly anyone else probably in the organization, when you're with the technology you're using. And so feeding ideas backwards as to what's possible, the technologies available to you, is massive. And, you know, we did a lot of that when we sort of deep diving gesture handler, Reanimated. You can look out at people who you can look at the competition. You can look at people who are, you know, doing designs just in isolation and think about how that might be possible using the technologies that are available in React Native. And, that's, I think, worked really well for us. On both sides saying, hey, what about this like crazy idea? I think that's one of the secrets to success.
So most of your like great UI and UX is then powered by Reanimated and gesture handlers. Do you also use something like Lottie animations here and there, or is that not part of your app?
Yeah. I'd say there used to be more Lotties than moving forwards, we're more driving a lot more with Reanimated, but you know, Lottie, and I think in the future maybe Rive, or the future of sort of like animated gesture graphics defined by a designer or a motion designer, animator, etc., that you can then use in your app and drive from components is definitely a really exciting future. And I think there's a lot more space for there to play in to really create something that's quite artistic and joyful. You know, I think we see this with Skia, we see this with new innovations. You know, also like I think there's room for 3JS and the sort of like what you have in the WebGL environment on the web to come through to React Native as well. It's in terms of like graphics and animations, I think what's exciting is we have such a great story of like we're already in a good spot, but we have so much more room to grow.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm excited to see what there will be. And just today, I saw another tweet from Mark Rosavi that they are working on something about 3D as well. So he's always pumping out like the good stuff. There are some geniuses in the React Native ecosystem that just keep creating epic stuff, and Mark Rosavi is definitely one of them. So I'll keep an eye on that. And of course, you mentioned William Kandil and Skia. Amazing release as well. So yeah, probably like endless possibilities here for great UI if you have the time for it.
Yeah.
I just want to come back to or wrap it up for Yonder. So we talked about like the, of course, you have like regulation challenges if we're talking about finances and fintech and credit cards, and you said the native code. But was there anything else that stood out during the development phase or over the last like 1 or 2 years that you still remember that was like the biggest challenge of the whole Yonder app?
I'd say on the whole, one of the reflections I had was I expected there to be more show stopping like bugs or problems. I think there was some, like you'd expect, sometimes we picked an early version of a technology to bet on. And we got burnt by that with tricky bugs and, you know, long debugging times and, you know, creating sort of like patches over it. But, you know, I don't want to name any names because I think those technologies today are amazing and also part of our success. There is, you know, one story that isn't actually about the app, but was a dramatic, you know, almost company killing event at Yonder, which was... Yonder raised a Series A, a round of funding back in 2022, and it about £14 million. And our bank at the time, Silicon Valley Bank, went under in March 2023, I believe around that time. And so Yonder was bankrupt for about, Yonder had no money for about 72 hours. This was, I think, a very, very rare event where, you know, startups go bust, right? It's the typical thing, but it's rare for the bank that the startup banks were to go bust, and that caused the startup to go bust. That was a pretty extraordinary event, I think, in our journey. But it's one of my, favorite is maybe not the right word here, but it's one of my most memorable moments at Yonder because. The way the team and the way that the founders dealt with it and was, I think, exceptional. You just don't get that kind of roller coaster at a big company, for sure.
Yeah, but I assume the founders had like sleepless 72 hours during that time.
Yeah, quite sleepless. Yeah.
For everyone interested, definitely check out the Yonder application. Again, Android and iOS, I'm going to put the links also in the show notes. But there are two more things I want to touch on with you before we end today. Because last year you gave a pretty nice talk at the AppJS that I actually watched last week or the other week because I was preparing a testing course for Galaxies. By the way, if you're interested in testing, check out the course on Galaxies. But... you have talked about React Native end-to-end testing with Maestro. And I looked at the latest survey. There was still, what's the competitor? Detox, I think, Detox is like the most common thing that React Native developers use. But Maestro seems to be up and coming. So Could you give us a quick overview about why Maestro, what's great about it, and like, are you using it at Yonder?
Yeah, so the way to break down sort of automated testing, so not manual testing, but automated testing, is you have unit tests, you have integration tests, and then you have end-to-end tests. So unit tests are typically functioning, testing functions, individual functions typically. And then integration tests are maybe testing some two components, so like compositions of functions. A good example for us is like, you know, we receive some server state from APIs that should drive some UI. So you've got like the component of server state, you've got the component of UI, and the integration test is, given some API response here, what does assert what the UI looks like? And you don't have to render the full app to do that. You can just render specific components or screens, which is what we do at Yonder. And then the final one is end-to-end testing, where you can essentially take your application, the entirety of it, and then put it through some automated tests. And it looks like almost like a robot is using your app. But there's no robot there. It's quite, the first time you see it, it's quite enjoyable. The landscape for that traditionally in React Native was you'd either pick Appium, which works across all kinds of mobile frameworks, whether you want doing Native or React Native or even probably Ionic or Xamarin, because it's black box, so it doesn't test the it just sort of can see the underlying view hierarchy of the app, and it can just work with that. Detox is a bit different. It's got a synchronization sort of like almost like middleware. So it's like listening to the network. It's like listening to the more of the React Native side. And it can just run a bit faster, but it's constrained to simulators and emulators. And because it's got that middle layer, every time React Native changes and updates, it often would break Detox. And the Detox, I think, as a whole, is a really, really great project run by, I believe, Wix still. Appium's Detox never felt there was the right kind of developer experience. You know, we talked about EAS build earlier, we talked about sort of the Expo developer experience. There never felt like that quality of developer experience in end-to-end testing. And so when Maestro came on the scene, I think right away I was like, well, they might not be there today, but like you say, I think they've got a trajectory to really solve this piece of the puzzle in the mobile development landscape. And I think, that's why I wanted to get up on stage and then talk about it and share that idea.
Yeah, I started using it. I think your talk gave me the inspiration to use it. And after seeing it, like, get some votes in the survey. And I must say, it really also feels like magic. Just using the, I don't know, is it called the Maestro Studio locally? Yeah. I think where it opens your app and you can click and it basically generates the tests. And have you encountered any limitations so far? I mean, that talk was probably about a year ago by now. Did you encounter any problems with it so far?
Yeah, I think what I tell the engineers at Yonder, and I tell anyone, is end-to-end testing is always like, there's always going to be like libraries or things you add to your app or changes you make to the app that will maybe break the testing framework or will change how you do the assertion to, you know, inside your tests. And I think as a consequence of that, you will spend more time writing and maintaining those tests. I don't think Maestro's quite got there yet, but I think they're committed to the cause, and I think the curve feels like it's on the way. I've seen good developments from them in the past year, and I'd still probably say they're the best in the space. But you know, there's still probably always, I'd say, caution of going to be some trade-off between time maintaining and looking off those tests compared to your unit and integration tests, which at Yonder, you know, we have like sub 40-second run times because we have some beefy dedicated servers that can run our full test suite. With like, I think our current machine is like 256 gigs of RAM. You use the parallelization of Jest to get a much faster response loop. I've typically, I wait for the day that end-to-end testing can be that fast. I genuinely believe it helps with morale. When you're developing day to day, like having great tools makes you happier.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. Good tools make such a difference. So that's why we also use React Native, not Java anymore. before we wrap up, I just want to, for the SEO traffic, we'll talk about AI, because it's always good to talk about AI. So yep. This is an AI episode. So you're giving a talk at React Native Connection in Paris. I don't want to, because maybe this, I don't know exactly the date of it, but maybe this is coming out before the conference. I just want to get your top points from the upcoming talk, because you're talking about the future of AI and enabled app development. And I'm curious, I've used also AI a bit to, in my day-to-day work here and there, some ChatGPT, some Copilot. But I'm curious what you talk about is, and if there's anything cool we can take away from it.
Yeah. So, I won't give too many spoilers, but the top level structure of the talk is, I mentioned at the start of the episode, like speaking about like sort of like S curves in technology and seeing how AI really feels like it's taking off and there's so much possibility. I then talk about what we're seeing with the sort of like latest developments in the space. So a year ago, I talked about, the idea that you'll be able to maybe do, the AI could write tests for your app. You can use the latest sort of, developments in computer vision. The AI can see all of the entire of your application, and then it can essentially write tests for you. That has now progressed into this idea of sort of agents. So this idea that, you can define some task, and then the agent is empowered, either at the OS level, maybe inside the app level with its own sort of debugger, to then execute some task, or to maybe like write code, see how it's displayed, and do some runtime debugging as well. And then, the final piece of the talk is like, okay, so the first order effects, the first effects of AI is an increase in the ability for, the traditional jobs we did, the labor, to be replaced with compute, to be replaced with like a CI, CD job, or like some sort of like computing task. So that's the first effect. What are the effects of that? So how does your organization change? How does your role change? How does, do we consolidate more? Do we specialize more? How do our tools change? Like, we've got some early signal that, ChatGPT and Copilot are really useful for developers. We'll probably have similar tools for QAs, similar tools for designers. There's probably going to be similar tools that abstract software engineering to enable anyone to really build software. We're seeing this like in the agent space a lot, but it's super early and it's super exciting. And you're going to see some, I think, really amazing companies be created here in this space.
Yeah, I totally agree. Whenever I get into AI and read some news, I'm always also getting super excited about all the things and the agents, and I'm also not really worried about these AIs taking away my job, as some people like to frame it or put out YouTube videos. It's not going to happen that early, but they will take your job if you don't learn to use them. And learning like a bit about AI prompts and writing the right prompts, getting the right thing out of ChatGPT, or using Copilot in the most efficient way in your code, just learning these skills, I think, is super important in the future for every developer.
Yeah, I think, the final sort of thought I'd give is, if you really look at the quote, like AI enables a lower floor, so it enables more people to become developers. But I think potentially more importantly is it really raises the ceiling of what any individual person, you could call them a developer, it doesn't really matter at this point, can do. You can now generate art, you can generate design, you can write code in any language you want. You can generate tests. You're probably going to be empowered to build so much more. And I'd really see less on the, I'd really watch out less and, be less worried about it taking your job and more excited about what your job can be in the future, because I think you're going to be able to do so much more with this stuff. And it's really exciting.
That's amazing. I should exactly tweet this out and give you credit for it, because that line sums it up. So thank you so much for taking the time today, Henry. Yonder, great application. Thank you for all the insights. I hope all of them were fine to give and we're not falling into any problem with Apple here. So everyone, again, check out your Yonder credit card. Is there any other place where should people find out more about you? What should they check out?
Yeah, I mean, if you are a UK resident and you're looking for, I'm never going to shill borrowing products, but if you are looking to maybe just like check out the app, or you are thinking about a new credit card, do check out Yonder. It's available at yonder.com. And then you can find me on Twitter at Henry Moulton. I'll be giving a talk in April about what I just mentioned about a bit about testing, a bit about AI. And yeah, thank you so much, Simon. It's been a real pleasure.
Amazing. Yeah. If you also want to learn more React Native, check out galaxies.dev, where I have all my courses. Also coming up, a new section called Launchpad. More on that very soon. So thanks again, Henry, for taking the time, and all the best for Yonder.
Thank you so much.